You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hello, this is Dr. Marco Brindis, and you're watching the Best Practices Show. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practice Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And I have a crazy huge treat for you. One of the most upcoming rising stars in all of dentistry, Dr. Marco Brindis. We have him today talking about a very interesting hot topic in dentistry, and you're going to love this. Do not miss this. So grab a pen and hit the share button. Sit back. You're going to love this. Now, couple show notes. We are shooting this live on Facebook. So as you're watching, if you have questions for Marco, please add them to the feed and I'll send them right to him. We'll ask him while he's on the show live. Or if you're watching this later on, continue to add questions to the feed and you'll see we'll get back to you, because we want you to get the most out of this while you're watching these. And again, thank you for all the suggestions, shares, follows, everything, even your comments. Love them all. And we're lining up all these shows over the next couple of weeks and months. You'll see we've got some incredible shows on the horizon. And right now, up over 39,000 followers on Facebook. I don't even know how that's working, but we appreciate all of it. And over 150,000 of you visiting on iTunes. So keep, you know, all I can say is thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, my guest today, Marco, I had you on last time and it blew up. We had like questions and people were commenting, and it was awesome and just loved, loved, loved it. Now, you and I have gotten to know each other recently. We met at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, which if you haven't been, you got to go. One of the most spectacular events. And you are a regular speaker, one of probably the most popular speakers, technical dentistry wise, in the network. But if somebody's watching this and they don't know who Dr. Marco Brindis is, please give us a little background on who you are, what you do, and share it with our listeners. Marco, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
All right. So tell us about you. Who are you, Marco?
Well, I'm here, Dr. Marco Brindis. I'm live from LSU School of Dentistry right now in my office. I had to skip a little course that I had to do, but to cover. But it's fine. I'm here. It was the implant course, so I'm here taking a break and spending some time with you guys.
Yeah, this is awesome. Now, you teach at LSU. You are also a speaker out there in technical dentistry, right? And you've got a long history in dentistry. I always love your story. Tell us your story a little bit, because your dad was a dentist and you got exposed to some of the best clinicians in the world when you were a kid, right?
Exactly. My dad, if I go back to Mexico, where I'm from, my name is actually the son of Dr. Brindis. And I love it. It's a great honor. He was running all over the place. And since I was a kid, I was with him. And he was like a natural. He was not formally trained prosthodontist, but he was a general dentist with a lot of training in natological school and full mouth rehabilitation, complete dentures. So I was always really into that, you know, like really, really messed up cases. And I grew up with that. And because of that, I was able to surround myself with a lot of great people, a lot of great mentors, like we mentioned last time, Dr. Bill Robbins and Bob Marges and Paresh Shah. And, you know, there's so many. And Dr. Sheesh, of course, that he was one of my mentors. And then even though there's a lot of mentors that I have that they don't even know me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never heard of me, but you know, it's. I consider my mentors because they have contributed so much to the industry that I admire them and I follow them without them knowing me. So I appreciate that, and I will mention a couple of them because everything that I know, as we all, it's just passed from somebody else, and then you kind of like your part is just to interpret that part in your brain and make sense in your brain and then come up with something related to what you learn from your mentors, right?
Right. Absolutely. And that's how this journey works for all of us, and exactly. Myself included. And so today we're
as a torch to somebody else.
Absolutely. Keep the fire going. And today we're going to be talking about a pretty hot topic, which is bonding techniques, the superhero that no implant likes. Now let's talk about this, because explain what that means. And then we're going to talk about the why, but give us a little context to that suggestion.
In early 90s, late 80s, mm-hmm. Okay, I remember my dad showed me a model and with implants, and I didn't have a clue what was an implant, a dental implant. And he was telling me, look what we're going to start doing. And like, what is that? It's a titanium thing. And that was fascinating, that all the tools that you needed to do and that you can actually give back to a patient, the teeth and everything. That's what I thought at the time. And so even before starting dental school, I wanted to do implant dentistry. And through dental school, through perio and all surgery and everything, and then pros, I said, this is it. This is what I want to do. I think implant dentistry is the future. I saw it like, you know, it's like science fiction that implants are going to take over the world and take over the teeth. And it happens, you know, with any villain. You know, the reason they become a villain is because they become arrogant, you know, and because they're so full of themselves, they're so powerful and they're so so helpful that at some point they cross the line and start overusing their powers, and that's what turned them into villains. You know, so there has to be somebody to stop them and bring balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like we were talking to Star Wars last time. It's just to bring balance to the Force. It's not everything implant dentistry. It's not everything ceramics or anything. But at some point, we start abusing it's kind of questionable tooth. Let's take it out and put an implant, you know?
Right.
And we start abusing that. And even sometimes like, oh, well, I can do a root canal, but, you know, root canals, I can have an implant. It's more successful there than a root canal. And I actually mentioned that one time to Dr. Michael Block, and I said, you know something, I'm never going to do root canals ever again. And he looked at me like, you're kidding me. I mean, and he's a surgeon. I mean, he loves to place implants. And he looked at me like, he told me another word, but I'm not going to say it. but tell me pretty much like, what's going on? What's wrong with you? You
know?
And I was having that conversation together with one of my best friends, an endodontist from Mexico, Juan Carlos Paz, and he was looking at me like, because I was kind of like giving him a hard time, like, you picked the wrong profession, you know, because it's going to take over endo, so just start changing your mind because this is going to happen, you like it or not.
Yeah.
So it was incredible, but then once I started in academia and everything, actually I was the course director, my courses in LSU were implant dentistry. I had the course for the first time. The first time that we had the course, I was the first director of the implant course in LSU. Later on, I was the program director of the fellowship of implant and surgical and that it just changed my life to mm-hmm. more and to understand that it's not always the right solution. And the thing is that the implants, it happens that they are going to have problems at some point.
Right.
The implants are just a piece of metal that is gentle with the tissue, but it doesn't have any powers like the PDL, like the periodontal ligament that has that capacity of remodeling the bone, that capacity of defense and to keep the soft tissue, the keratinized tissue, all of that, all those things. We don't have them with the implant.
Right.
And so that's where I started like, oh, my God. And then the more I was doing them and the more I was having follow-ups, then that's when I realized, man, if I need an implant right now, I probably would try to postpone it somehow
mm-hmm.
and as much as I can. And the more I see implants, the more I see them as a plan B, and an amazing plan B. But they're way different than what I thought before, that they were the plan A, that they were taking over the teeth. And it's not the truth. And now my perception has changed completely. And actually, the first class, in the first day of my course with the students, is to teach them how to respect what God gave you.
Right. First.
And then from there, we jump into, once everything failed, what can we do with the implants?
Right. And there's so many different roads to take on this. Use the word reversible. Do you know what I mean? To speak about that. And, you know, the bonding materials have exponentially improved over time, too. So this is the perfect place to have this conversation, correct?
Absolutely. And what happened is, for example, when I was in my training, in my residency in prosthodontics, and before that, everything that we were doing, we was retentive dentistry,
mm-hmm.
right? And not that it was not working. I know I have cases for 13, 14 years, successful cases. But as well as I have a lot of failures as well. And the problem is everything that we do has the potential to fail.
Right.
Everything. Every single thing. So is how much damage you're going to have when it fails? How catastrophic this failure is going to be? And that's how I measure what kind of dentistry I want to do. Based on when it fails, what I'm going to do next.
Okay.
So, and I probably mentioned it that last time. Again, it's just like you have a mosquito in the room. They're very annoying, right? Especially mm-hmm. at 3 a.m.
Yep.
All over the place. And you're just like smacking your face, smacking your wife. Well, that's a little trick, but, but smacking your face and everything. And you really, really want to do whatever it takes to kill that mosquito, right?
Right.
So I know that if I use a bazooka, I can nail that mosquito. But okay. The damage surrounding that is going to be very, very severe.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to start with the most gentle possibilities, which is slap it with a hand. If you can't, get the pillow, but still not damaging.
Right.
You know, so in a way, we have to find solutions in a certain order. And the order is, how much damage are you creating by creating that solution? And second, how much damage you're going to have if that solution fails?
Right, right.
And so with that in mind, then restorative dentistry started not making too much sense. But I was not still very... very sure what I was thinking until I was first read the book from Pascal Manier from USC. Mm-hmm. And it was an eye-opener for me. But the first time that I heard, and it was really dramatic when I saw this person lecturing at the ceramic symposium, one of the best symposiums that we have. And you now they do in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Every 3 years, if you don't know it, just look for it. It's a really good thing to watch. And they brought Francesca Baliati, and oh my God, what a presence! It was a mind blowing experience. It just really changed the way I wanted to learn dentistry. He's the one that actually make a big change in my life, and actually for me to start paying attention to other mentors that have the same philosophy. And then I started like looking like, hey, wait a second, there's a lot of bonding. I have to learn more about bonding. Oh, there's more ceramics, because with different ceramics, with stronger ceramics, you don't have to reduce that much to structure, you know, in bruxers and everything. And so we were starting looking on different materials that they were stronger, but at the same time, they were not having the same bonding capability of the other materials, right? So that started getting very intrigued about this. And it was not until Dr. Michael Block invited me to give a lecture at the implant conference in Chicago.
Okay.
Implant conference at Chicago for the AMOS. It's always the first weekend of December. And it's an incredible program. And this is the vision of Dr. Michael Block, who is a chair of that meeting. And the vision was, he told me, Marco, I want you to come and talk to my surgeons about ceramic materials. And I was like, you kidding me? Really? I can bore everybody to death. A general dentist, even a prosthodontist, I can make him really snore during my lecture. And you're asking me to teach these to oral surgeons. And it's because of that vision. He had that vision all the time together. And in that meeting, the oral surgeons, they bring their referrals. And they have a very good team to understand. So that was... that got me in a very, very, I was very honored to be invited, but very nervous. I called Dr. Michael Block and said, like, I'm so honored to be invited. Thank you so much. But no, I cannot do this, because really it's just, I don't know how to explain it. You're like, well, figure it out.
Wow.
So I had a year to figure it out. And that's when it came to me. And I started understanding from other mentors like John Burgess, who taught me so much about bonding techniques, especially how to bond zirconia. He is the first one that I heard. I'm not saying he was the first one, but he was the first I heard talking about bonding zirconia. Before that, I heard some of that from Dr. Sheesh and Dr. Marcus Blatz. And they taught me a lot about that. But when it was John Burgess, he was so strong in his comments. He was so like, you can bond. He was not like, you can kind of bond. They're like, no, you can bond zirconia. Like, you can't, really? That kind of opened another can of worms, you know, like,
right.
You have to explore that. And that I started getting interested in that. And then I ended up comparing all the different ceramics in the symposium. And I figured it out. And I have to say it, from that time, I had to pat myself in the back and say, like, that one, I nailed that one, because I actually was able to pass the message, and everybody got the message. And the theme for that lecture, it was superheroes. And that's the reason it just makes it very easy. It's like, who's going to help, who's going to damage, and how to bring the balance to it.
Yeah.
That's how I started my journey. And then I start experiencing by being creative with, everybody has to be creative in how to preserve the structure, and then how to keep at any cost the tooth in place before going to the option of an implant.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think about, you and I were talking about this before we went live. You know, I have three teenage daughters, and if my daughter turns 20 and she needs, you know, work in the aesthetic zone, you know, what would you choose? And dentists used to say this all the time, if it was my daughter or if it was my spouse. You know, now the conscious part of it is like, that is true. We would always do some type of a bonding or ceramics instead of just taking the teeth out and putting an implant on a young, because you help me understand this. Everything fails at one point, doesn't it? Like, it's just what's going to fail the least. Exactly. over time. Right. You know, so you kind of got to weigh all of these, when you're making decisions with patients.
And pretty much it's a rule. The more invasive you are on your treatment, the more catastrophic is the failure. So to put an example, all right, I have a tooth that is questionable, all right? If I go ahead and bond something on that tooth, respecting whatever is left, and bond it to that tooth, the worst thing could happen, Okay, I'm not talking about posting core. I'm talking about just bonding, pure bonding to the remaining two structure. The worst thing could happen is to go back to where you were before.
Right.
And if it fails in 2 years, 3 years, I'm perfectly fine. There's a big difference on placing an implant when you're 18, then 21, then 24, then 28. There's a big difference, mm-hmm. right? There's still vertical growth, and they're still showing some studies showing vertical growth of the maxilla, bringing different levels of the teeth with the implant crown. And even people of 45-year-old, 50-year-old, they're still having some movement. So the younger the patient, the more movement you can expect. So going back to my example. So if I have a questionable tooth and I go with this bonded restoration and it fails, I do it again.
Right.
And perhaps with a little more damage, but just a little more. All right. Or if I go to retentive dentistry and say like, no, the only way to retain these is with a post. And mm-hmm. I go with a post and I have a post in court. I can guarantee you so many people that are going to be listening to this, they have experienced at least once when the tooth breaks with a post, the whole tooth breaks.
Mm-hmm.
That created a lot of damage.
Right.
So from there, I'm thinking the worst case scenario is going to break the whole tooth and create a fracture that might create an infection, that might create some bone loss, that might create some periodontal problem, that might create problems on the adjacent dentition. And that's when I start, pressing the brakes. And the next thing is like, well, I'm just going to go straight. I'm going to skip all that, and I'm going to go straight to extract the tooth. As tooth that has PDL, I'm not extracting the tooth. I'm extracting the PDL, right? That PDL that is responsible of this bone remodeling, that is going to preserve the thickness of that tissue for the rest of the life of the patient.
All right. Yeah.
Now I go with an implant. All right. I go with an implant that, oh my God, there are so many talented people, but there's one that I want to mention that actually as well opened my mind so much. It was Joseph Kahn. Joseph Kahn is unbelievable. You have to see him giving a lecture. It's outstanding because he presents the follow-ups of 12, 15, 20 years. And he shows all the differences, how that evolved. A case that he published, for example, he does that. He published when he finished the case. And it was like everybody invited him to give lectures because it was so beautiful. And then he's showing 20 years later. You're like, huh, what do you think now?
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good as you thought it was.
Right.
Now I know that it was not the right thing to do. And now I learn from this to do this and this and this. But he keeps saying, be careful. That doesn't mean that in 20 years it's not going to be bad.
Yeah.
But he's showing his articles are outstanding and so relevant for a clinician. So relevant. Him and Michael Block, they're right on top on that, you know? And so when you place an implant, you lose that ligament. And your daughter, at 20 years old, if we have to do this, if I place an implant, for how long? How long we can have this implant? And the more time the implant is there, the more chances we have to have some failure. And if that implant happens to be in the front, and your daughter is like another normal beautiful woman is going to show some gingival display.
Right.
Pretty much the majority of the female patients are going to show a gingival display. Well, a failure is going to be very catastrophic and very damaging, not only to the mouth, to the mental health of the patient and the emotional health of the patient. It really is something that is actually can change the personality of a person.
Yeah.
It goes, so you see that progression of from going from very little damage to some damage to really severe damage that actually now is affecting the whole behavior of the patient.
Yeah, and I have so many questions. You know, you think about this, 1 in 3 babies that's born today is actually going to live to be 100. People are going to be living longer too. So the natural implications of how we put the puzzle together, more complex now than ever, because it's got to last longer. Now, I do want to ask you just practical application, because if I'm a dentist watching this, Marco, just give us a perspective on the average patient, let's say single implant in the aesthetic zone. Like, how much do you see that? Give us some perspective in what you see every day when that happens in your practice?
My type of practice is referral based. Mm-hmm. So the most amount of patients that I see is, for example, congenital missing laterals, for example.
Okay. Right?
And they send me the patient when they're 15, 16-year-old for an opinion. And I like to have that approach. The earliest you can bring your restorative team, and that goes for the orthodontist and periodontist, the earliest you bring the ideas of what are you going to do, you can plan better on, mm-hmm. on your ortho treatment, right?
Right.
So they sent to me at 15 or 17. It used to be done like they took a radiograph of the hand to see if the patient already finished their growth, and after finishing their growth, then place the implant, right? And that was pretty simple, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, and the most we all know that the most common tooth missing, congenital missing tooth, is a lateral incisor, right?
Right.
And Vincent Kokic and now Vincent Kokic Jr., they have explored that topic so well in the literature on what is the best approach to bring the canine to the lateral or to leave it over there and place an implant, where do you place the implant, all that kind of logistic. But here's the thing. I get these patients, and at the beginning I was actually having that approach of taking the radiograph and everything, but I started noticing with very close friends that I did those procedures with implants, that after a couple of years, not too many, after 5 years, you can still see a little difference on the level in comparison with the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
You can see some intrusion of the implant, but it's more, it's still vertical growth of the maxilla, especially in this area. Especially in this area, there's still growth and never is going to go away. Can slow down and slow down dramatically, that is not significant anymore. But you're always going to have some growth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started noticing problems and start seeing now patients that were being sent to me because my best referrals are my students. And they start referring me because I was their teacher in implant dentistry and aesthetics and everything. So they send me these patients. It's like, and you see these huge defects and implants side by side, and it's like, oh my God. And the more you see it, the more time you spend in implant dentistry, you see these things that I start saying, like, this has to be another solution.
Mm-hmm.
For example, for that specific situation of congenital missing lateral, okay,
right.
Which is a very common problem. I go for a Maryland bridge. For many reasons. Many times you don't even have to prep the tooth, just a slight margin, a little dimple, perhaps, just to seat it. But something that you can stay completely in enamel, very little damage to the tooth that is holding the pontic. The materials that we have right now, when you start doing metal, years ago, Marcus Blatz and Jerry Sheesh and Sadana Vishai published an article here in LSU and showing how to get the best bonding protocol for that Maryland bridge.
Mm-hmm.
With aluminum particles bombarded to the ceramic, having some silane. That was the way that we used to bond zirconia, and it was like a temporary solution. We used to call it a temporary solution. I remember like, don't waste their time. The patient is wasting their money. But no, they're gaining time. That's right. What you see. Like I said before, it's not the same to place an implant on a 20-year-old, then a 23, then a 26, then a 30, all right? So if I can bring that and postpone that implant placement, that's great, you mm-hmm. know? So that bonding would last, for example, I don't know. I'm just making up a number, but 2 years. Let's say 2 years. Mm-hmm. So your daughter has to, I have to go again to the dentist. Yes, but you already gained 2 years.
Right.
That is going to make the implant predictable, or that you can bond this again. All right?
Yeah.
Zirconia with the right size of connector, zirconia works well. Now, one thing that Marcus Blatz taught me was that we used to do the Maryland bridges using the central and the canine, a wing on the central and the canine, and what happened to him clinically is that he was getting one of them debonded or broken, one of them, okay, and the other would stay there. So he said, like, well, I'm gonna go straight to just put it on one wing, and believe it or not, actually that cantilever works better than having two wings.
Mm.
I learned that from Dr. Marcus Blatz. And so I started doing that. And let's say it lasted two years. I still would do it again. And I would do it again. And if with the right periodontal procedure with a soft tissue graft, keratinized tissue graft, you can get a really good bulk that might last a long time. So it doesn't have the collapse of the tissue. You can still have the grafting. Have it ready for if one day you want to have the implant, you can. If the patient gets tired of going back to the dentist to replace that, perhaps then, but you already gain time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one very simple example that is a very common problem for everybody. I think a Maryland bridge, it can be done very well. The feldspathic material bonds very well to the zirconia nowadays, very well. That you can just cover and make it very aesthetic. Very, very aesthetic. And with the right, the proper management of the occlusion scheme, you can make them last for a long time. And the bonding procedures that we have right now, nowadays, described by again, I'm not going to mention everybody because I don't know everybody.
Right.
I would mention my two main sources, John Burgess and Marcus Blatz.
Mm, outstanding.
And Jerry Sheets for sure.
Absolutely. Now, the natural question that comes up, and you're out speaking to real dentists doing this all the time, is, Marco, I totally understand, but the villain here can sometimes be the financial implications. Can I make money, you know, with bonding as where I used to do implants? You get that one all the time, right? So
absolutely. And first, one thing. The first thing I learned is from my dad is you work with your heart, mm-hmm. and the other and your button,
right.
your button, and put your best effort and passion, and money is gonna come by itself.
Yep.
You know. I never plan based on money. I plan based on whatever is best, and life is gonna get you in a good place. That's the first thing. The second thing is not always right. It's not right. Actually, most of the time it's not right. Actually, we could make a lot more money with prevention than with execution and taking care when things are already exploding, all right?
Yep.
Because when the things are exploding, they're expensive for everybody, for the patient and for us. The overhead, the time that you spend, it's bad for everybody. But let me give you an example of how actually you can actually reduce the amount of money that you charge for the patient, the service that you give it to the patient, and the problems that you're going to have, problems are going to be very expensive in the future. So, for example, I have one patient here in LSU, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The patient had three times in 1 year, they deliver a set of PFM crowns, all right? Typical PFM crown that it was not properly done with the wrong ceramist, and they were too opaque with a great halo and everything. It was kind of a disaster. It was very too opaque. The patient wanted something white, but not toilet white. So we did, after three times, they refer the patient to us. We did this with one of my residents, Andres Papa, and he was in charge. And I decided we're going to do a porcelain fused to zirconia this time. We
right.
want to need that part, but you know, after three times of making, this is the fourth time we're making the crowns, the teeth get quite beat up, right? And we have to re-prep again, the nervous damage and all that kind of stuff. We have one tooth with a root canal. Anyway, we deliver all these crowns from premolar to premolar. And it worked great. The patient was extremely happy. The ceramics that we used, it was outstanding. So aesthetics was prime aesthetics. We send the patient back. The patient comes back after 5 years of wearing these crowns with a little mobility on number. It was the right central. And what happened, the central was broken. It was broken to the gum line. And again, that's a problem that I know everybody watching this have experienced before. So the question is, what are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we talk to the patient and say, listen, normally what we do with these kind of cases, not to mention going back to the first scenario that it was natural dentition. Now you have crowns, which is going to be very hard to bump anything. You could, but it's going to be hard to deal with those crowns. You don't want to add more forces to these already prep teeth and everything, perfectly fine crowns. You don't want to open a can of worms.
Right.
You want to leave them alone. So what are your options? Have a flipper. Not a good idea, right? We don't want that. Have an implant. Have a posting core. We don't have a core. We don't have enough ferrule. So we know that the chances that that's going to work is not going to be good. And again, it's going to be catastrophic the way they fail.
Right.
The other one is with control damage, we can extract very traumatically and place an implant. This patient happens to be 45 now, and I still consider that patient very young.
Yeah.
All right. So I talked to the patient, and like, well, I can send you to a surgery and we can extract this. We can perhaps do a little force eruption to overcorrect so we don't have any recession. Of course, the patient gingival display. We talk about the possible complications. We talk about the price, how much it's going to be, and all that. And then we talk, you know, something. I'm going to do something that probably I shouldn't be doing. But based on what I know and what I have seen from what I learned about bonding, okay, this is zirconia, all right? So I'm going to use this technique that I learned from Marcus Blass and John Burgess. And I do the technique, I sandblast everything, the proper primer, chemical bonding, and it was matching perfect the crown, all right,
yeah,
to the rest of the root, and we bonded back. Here's the thing, that tooth has been there for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I bought this patient 3 more years without having the need of an implant, and I don't know for how much longer this is gonna last. We'll see.
All right. Yeah.
I know, because, I mean, my residents come and go, but I still hear, and I know I'm going to follow up. If something happens, I know I'm going to hear from her.
Yeah. Yeah. And you gave us one of the most brilliant things is really changing your mindset to, hey, look, the future is making a career in prevention. And we're already seeing it from cardiologists. A lot of people are moving to concierge medicine completely preventive. And they're making a lot more in that realm than people that are just doing surgery all day and putting in stents in a lot of respects. Now, the thing, I'm not suggesting this, but if you're a dentist watching this, I want you to think about this. And I'm not saying do this, but I know a lot about dentistry. And I would say, hey, look, the thing that you're getting paid for as a dentist is your expertise, your skill, and your judgment. It's not the procedure. So, Marco, if I came to two dentists, I went to one dentist and I got into an accident, I broke some anteriors. One dentist says, look, I'm going to do implants. It's going to be $15,000. And I went to you and you said, hey, look, I'm going to charge you the same amount, but we're going to do bonding and it's only going to be one appointment and I'm not going to put screws into your bone. Who am I going to choose? I'm going to choose you in a heartbeat. Do you know what I mean? Because for me, It's a judgment call on the expertise, not so much the procedures, because all of that thing. So I'm not asking you to do that, but I want you to think about that for a second. Patients would much rather, given the full disclosure and transparency of this, I could put screws in all this and charge you this, or I can do bonding and really take my time, make it look gorgeous for less invasive, you know, less time, all that. It's just something to think about.
Absolutely. You got it. You nailed it right there. And not to mention, I'm talking about prevention, all right? Let's not talk about restorative. Your perspective in restorative, you're absolutely right. It doesn't matter if you don't charge more because it was more time or it was more sophisticated. You charge for the judgment that you're providing, and you're charging for the better solution, you know? And for example, Bill Robbins was telling me one time that patient had the idea that the more aggressive the prep, the more they're going to be charged, you know?
Mm.
And for example, you know the little chip that you have on a central?
Yeah.
And those little chips are way harder than a big restoration, all right? They're a pain in the butt. And Bill Rogers was telling me, I actually charge more for a little chip. The smaller the restoration is, the more I charge for the restoration.
Yeah, and he was talking about the lower anterior crown is probably the hardest thing ever for any dentist to get perfect. So, I mean, you add all that up and you're like, okay, well, this makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, just going to finish these caves that we did, what's going to happen? What's the way he's going to fail? If he fails, he's going to debond. Mm-hmm. And I already proved that I can bond this for 3 years. So if he debonds, the patient can come back and I can bond it again.
Right.
And I know the patient, they will pay for what I'm going to do, you know. But the patient is very grateful that I'm actually giving perfectly healthy gums that are not moving. They're not having any recession. They're not having any discoloration. Then, and the worst thing could happen is to go back to where we started.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the key. That's why I see these bonding dentistry is taking over implant dentistry. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps it's not taking over, but it's bringing balance to where it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. These materials get better. You're out there. You get a chance to see all of this stuff. Give us some. What do you think the future of bonding is going to look like? I mean, anyone can guess, but let's give us some idea what we're going to see in the next couple of years with these materials and bonding. Did I lose you again? Or?
Well, I think that the future is going to be, well, first of all, it's going to be prevention. It's going to be on the restorative side, it's going to be more and more bonding. Mm-hmm. I think that the future is, unless the patient already has crowns, mm-hmm. I think crowns are going to be completely obsolete. I think right now could be the case, but I think it's going to take more time for that chip to change and to understand the concept of why we were doing the preps. You know, people that, you know, if you know how to do prep, you're going to do a prep, you know, mm-hmm. for retentive restoration. Right. So, but it's starting with great teachers that are more and more doing these. I think that's the future. It's going to be no crowns. It's going to be additive dentistry. If you're missing part of the tooth, just add what is missing, you know. There are different techniques. They're figuring out little hiccups that we had with that. They're getting better. And again, really practical people like Francesca Baliati or Mauro Fradiani. You know, they're so good, so creative, and they never stop thinking how to make it better and how to improve the restorations, the ceramics, as well as improving the bonding. But bonding is a great thing. You cannot talk about ceramics without talking bonding, right? They come together, mm-hmm. and we understand them very well because they have different properties. And I think that's the future on one part. And I know, I don't know anything about teeth regeneration. I don't know anything about that, but I know it's coming. I know there's advances in stem cells and all that. I know that there are a lot of schools that are devoting their research on that aspect. And I know at some point it's going to happen, you know, to the point, for example, that I have done, for example, I have done transplants, you know, implant transplants. And for example, we were losing a first molar. And the patient happened that had a third molar, but a third molar, it was out of occlusion that we were extracting anyway. So we extracted the first molar and placed the third molar in the first molar site with a follow-up of 10 years. And, you know, you start being creative on that kind of things and understanding biology and understanding what a big advantage to have your own teeth. You know, that's the key. I mean, it came back to that's what we hear, and not only it's not to say cheat is to give that people hope and people that in time and respect the patient and respect them always treating them like you said, like your daughter, like your like somebody love. That's how, what we do in cancer, right?
Yeah, it's good stuff, buddy. I'm always super grateful for our conversations. I get to learn so much. I love the energy. And I'm just saying, if you're a dentist watching this and you haven't had Marco speak to your study club, you have to. He's just brilliant. And he's one of the favorites out there. And we're going to continue to have you back, Marco, again and again and again. So thank you so much, my friend, for your expertise, your knowledge, and you're willing to give to this great profession. I appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, my friend. It was it's always so much fun to talk to you and your audience and I hope to see you soon, my friend.
Yeah, so stick around now. We're going to put your information in the post, so if you want to reach out to Marco, you can certainly reach out to Marco. He's great at getting back. You're also going to be at Seattle Study Club Symposium. Are you going to be there this year or?
I will definitely gonna attend.
Yeah, sure. So I'll be there too. So come hang out with us. You do not want to miss this. And keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to see from not only Marco, but everybody else. And we'll do our best to get these on in a timely fashion. I hope you guys enjoyed today. Do us a favor. Just hit the share button, share it with your friends. And until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practice Show. You guys have a great rest of your day.